Greetings, and welcome to the Coveris First Quarter 2017 Results Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A brief question-and-answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Dwayne Owens, Treasurer for Coveris. Thank you, sir. You may begin.
Good morning. Thank you, Christine, and welcome to our First Quarter 2017 Results Call. With me today is Dave Mezenat, our Chairman and CEO, along with Mike Augur, our CFO. Before we begin, I need to call your attention to the cautionary forward-looking statement language that is contained in our financial statements and on our website. If you haven't read it, please do so. We will be discussing such forward-looking matters on the call today, and you should be aware, due to the uncertainties inherent in such statements, actual results may differ, and any such statements are not guarantees of future performance. For your convenience, we have posted a bridge from our net loss to adjusted EBITDA on our website at coveris.com. After our comments, we will answer your questions, and I'll now turn the call over to Dave.
Good morning, and thank you all for joining us today. When I assumed the CEO role at Coveris in January, we focused on developing a deeper understanding of the issues in Coveris that led to a weak second half of 2016. These issues were discussed during the fourth quarter earnings call and included the following: a significant machine failure in one of our U.K. plants, a poor ERP implementation in another U.K. plant, a market shift in the U.K. labels segment, higher customer churn in the EMEA business, and Brexit-driven foreign exchange impacts. Over these past few months, we've addressed each of these issues and are beginning to see positive operational improvements. For example, lead times in our U.K. plants have returned to normal, and on-time delivery is back above 95%. On the commercial front, we're still suffering some lingering effects of poor customer care in 2016, and this is reflected in our first quarter volumes. Total volume was off 2.8% versus the prior year. Our rigid division grew by 2.3%, but our flexibles division was down by 4.5%, driven by lower volumes in both the Americas and Europe. Net sales of $598 million were down $41 million from the first quarter of 2016, with foreign currency accounting for $35 million of this decline. So on a constant currency basis, sales were down 1%. Lower shipment volumes to our shrink film and protein customers in the U.S., a mix shift in our U.K. labels business, and customer losses related to fourth quarter service issues in the U.K. accounted for this volume decline. Adjusted EBITDA of $59 million was down $12 million year-over-year on a constant currency basis. The operating improvements I referenced above, combined with some seasonal uplift, are expected to drive improving financial performance in the second half of this year. In the following comments, I'll provide some detail on several new initiatives we've developed to improve both our top-line growth and bottom-line profitability. We're addressing the issues we uncovered head-on with focused action plans. We've engaged a third-party consultant to assist us on the commercial side of the business. As I mentioned last quarter, growing our volumes and revenue is a key initiative for 2017. We are also developing a revised tender management process that better links price and volume in order to increase our win rate and acceptable margins. In addition, we are evaluating the economics at the SKU level in each of our business units to determine where we have opportunities to improve operating efficiencies, reduce waste, re-engineer the product formulations, or modify pricing. Performing this analysis at the lowest level within each business unit allows us to drive profitability at the machine level. In addition to some great work on the commercial side, we have also implemented countermeasures on the cost side to address the shortfall experienced in the quarter. We are right-sizing the company to our current demand. This will result in some restructuring expense in the form of severance, particularly in Europe, where it is expensive to downsize the business. Organizationally, we have reorganized Proveris into four primary strategic business units. In March, we announced the combination of our flexible business units in the Americas into one business unit under a strong management team. This will result in a more efficient overhead structure and a more streamlined approach to the market. In addition to this change, we've also made a leadership change in the UK to change the trajectory of that business. We'll be moving a strong U.S. leader with significant U.K. experience back to the U.K. to take over this business and have high expectations of the recovery in that region. Turning to productivity, we had another good quarter of improvement. We realized about $9 million in savings between procurement initiatives and lean manufacturing. Productivity gains are expected to continue during the remainder of 2017. One of the procurement initiatives we have initiated in North America right now is focused on our indirect spend. We spend approximately $300 million each year on indirect cost components. We're looking to reduce the complexity in our supply base and accelerate best practices across Coveris to drive savings in this category. This improvement will begin to show up in our productivity numbers for the second half of the year. For the quarter, we invested $40 million in capital equipment, which is slightly higher than the same period last year. We had final payments on a number of great projects during the quarter. These projects are expected to help drive our financial performance in the back half of the year as they come on stream. An example of one of these is work we have completed to modernize our Whitby facility in Ontario, Canada. At this site, we completed a $10 million project spend over 2 years that concluded in March. The project replaced five older extrusion lines with two new high-output lines, which reduce waste, utilities, and maintenance while increasing yield and allowing for the use of reclaimed resins. This project has a 2-year payback and is already achieving savings for us. Finally, for me, just an update on the CEO search. As you know, we announced the departure of our former CEO in January of this year. At that time, I stepped into the role on a full-time basis until a successor can be named. Our owners, Sun Capital Partners, have been actively searching for the ideal candidate. We've interviewed several well-qualified individuals and are in the later stages of identifying the right leader for Coveris. We're being very deliberate with this search, taking the time necessary to get it right. In summary, while the first quarter had some business challenges that lingered from last year, we expect the second half of the year to result in better year-over-year performance as our growth and recovery initiatives gain traction. We remain focused on growing our top line and driving customer care to differentiate ourselves from our competition. Now, Mike will discuss more details about our financial results for the quarter.
Thanks, Dave. Coveris net sales for the first quarter were $598 million versus sales of $639 million in the first quarter of 2016. Of the $41 million decline, the stronger U.S. dollar accounted for 85%, or $35 million of the decline. Adjusting for currency, sales are down about 1%. The decline is primarily attributable to the commercial weakness in the UK and lower shipments in the Americas. Our volumes for the quarter were down 2.8% compared with the first quarter of last year. Rigid grew volumes by 2.3%, while flexibles declined by 4.5%. The decline in flexibles relates to lower shrink and protein customer shipments in North America and the continuation of weakness related to service issues in the UK, offset by a positive 1.2% increase in volumes across continental Europe. The improvement in Europe is very encouraging, and we're seeing that trend continue into the second quarter. Our adjusted EBITDA for the quarter was $59 million versus $75 million for the first quarter of last year. Currency accounted for $4 million of the decline. Other negatives included price volume mix of $12 million negative, along with an increase in SG&A of $3 million, and the resin lag impact of $3 million primarily accounted for the balance of that shortfall. These negatives were partially offset by productivity gains of $9 million in the quarter. Our gross margin was 13.6% for the quarter, which is 190 basis points lower than the prior year. Key drivers of the lower margin were higher costs associated with polystyrene resin increases that has not yet been passed on, and mix shift to lower margin customers. The mix shift was driven by reduced protein sales in the United States and the UK labels mix change that we have highlighted in the past. Resin costs have stabilized or declined recently, which should have a positive impact going forward. Through our commercial efforts, we are pursuing higher margin business, as Dave mentioned. Our SG&A, as reported, was higher in the quarter compared with the prior year quarter by approximately $5 million. This is attributable to extensive business process improvement consulting work we are doing with a third party around improving our top line, as well as helping us get procurement savings from indirect spend. We expect these SG&A spend investments to have a positive impact on our earnings in the second half and going forward. We've also initiated a cost reduction program around G&A that is underway and will generate savings in the second half of the year. For the quarter, special items were $16 million versus $9 million in the first quarter of last year. This increase is a result of the consulting expense related to commercialization and procurement practices that I just mentioned. Turning to our business segments, the flexible segment had net sales of $456 million in the quarter versus $488 million in the same quarter last year. Currency accounts for $27 million of this decline. Volumes were down 4.5% in the quarter, about 6% in North America, and a little over 5% in the UK, offset by slightly positive volume growth in Europe. Operating income for the quarter was $17 million versus $33 million in the same quarter last year. The decline in operating income is related to these volume decreases as well as mix and service issues, especially in the UK. The Rigid segment had net sales of $142 million for the quarter versus $151 million in the prior year quarter. This decline is almost entirely related to currency. Shipment volumes were up overall for the quarter, but down slightly in North America. Operating income of $5 million for the quarter was up about $1 million from the prior year quarter, due primarily to lower general and administrative expenses. In our financial statements, the unallocated or corporate charges that we show separately is to allow you to get additional segment clarity. Our corporate charges increased $16 million for the quarter versus $8 million in the same period last year. This increase is due primarily to additional commercial consulting that we have discussed today. Moving to the balance sheet, our inventory balance of $309 million is up about $35 million from year-end. Among other things, the increase is related to a new product launch for one of our pet food customers, resin pre-buying ahead of a price increase, and the timing of shrink film shipments ahead of the peak season for that product. Our total net debt was approximately $1.65 billion at the end of the quarter. This represents an increase of approximately $36 million from year-end, which is mainly related to an investment in working capital, specifically inventory. At the end of the quarter, we had approximately $124 million drawn on the revolver. Including cash, we had approximately $125 million worth of liquidity. Our net leverage ratio was about 5.7 times. Now moving to the cash flow statement. Our capital spending was $40 million for the quarter. While we will continue to invest in growth opportunities in our strategic product segments, as well as modernizing our facilities, we are also interested in generating more cash. As a result, we are focusing our capital on even higher return projects than we have historically. These investments will drive future earnings and EBITDA growth, we believe. Because of carryover capital spending, we expect overall spending in 2017 to be around the same level as it was in 2016. Cash flow from operating activities of $12 million included an increase in working capital of about $19 million. Inventory, as I mentioned, represented $35 million of this increase. The inventory increase was both seasonal and strategic as we gear up for some important product launches. For the second quarter of 2017, we expect a sequential improvement in EBITDA, but to remain weak compared to the prior year. The second quarter of 2016 was a very strong quarter for Caveras. We do expect the back half of the year to improve versus 2016 and versus the first half, primarily driven by our continual productivity enhancements and the results of the commercial initiatives and other efforts that we have undertaken. With that, operator, we will now open the call to questions.
Thank you. We will now be conducting a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we poll for questions. Thank you. Our first question comes from the line of Roger Spitz with Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please proceed with your question.
Thanks very much and good morning. Regarding the Flexibles Q1 17 EBIT versus year-over-year is down 16, I know you gave the main components, but I wonder, is it possible to give an actual bridge, you know, with dollars of the $16 million EBIT decline? I mean, we know that FX was a $1 million favorable, I guess, but, you know, from volume and price and ERP, just to understand where the components lie.
Roger, we can follow up on that. That's a little more granularity than I'm prepared to go through on the call. I would tell you that the gross margin decline that we discussed is the predominant driver there, and that's related to issues like volume, mix, and a little bit of pricing. Not a whole lot of resin impact occurred. So I don't have the specific bridge in front of me, but those are the rough elements.
Okay. In terms of the special items for 2017, do you have articulating a particular goal? You were $65 million in 16. Do you have a view on where you might want to come out on 17, or is this going to be a transition year for you?
It's a transition year. That's a great point. But as we said on the last call and still feel is probably realistic, it will be in that same area of 65. I believe it will be slightly lower, but I'm loath to say exactly. We are, as we mentioned, investing pretty heavily in ensuring that we have the right business processes to be successful going forward. And we are going to embark on some cost reduction initiatives that have already started that process. And sometimes, especially because of the different rules in different countries, it's a little difficult for me to exactly say what that number is going to be. So I think for modeling purposes, it's reasonable to think that it will be in the same ballpark as last year.
Thank you. And lastly, you've given some guidance on EBITDA. I wonder if you might give some 2017 overall free cash flow guidance, if not, if you can in numbers, but if not in numbers, a sense of, do you think it'll be, you know, negative, modestly negative, flat, modestly positive, or some sort of guidance of where you think you might come out on a full free cash flow basis?
Modestly negative to modestly positive with flat line feeling about right. Again, it will depend a little bit on the EBITDA trajectory that we gain in the second half of the year and the ability to reduce our inventories a bit from where we saw them growing in the first quarter. We have action plans in place and feel that we should be pretty successful with that, and we do get large working capital releases in the second half of the year historically and believe that to be the case. So I believe that that's probably a reasonable range, Roger.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Our next question comes from a line of Richard Cuss with Jefferies. Please proceed with your question.
Hey, guys. So you talked a little bit about the cost reduction initiatives, I think specific to SG&A and some of the actions you're going to be taking in Europe. Can you give us a sense for how much savings you expect to get from that and what kind of cash investment you expect that to require?
Well, we're still working through all of the details on a full year basis. For this year, we would expect to be somewhere in the 15 to 20 million range of savings. I do not yet have a full workout on what the cost of that will be, but it will be less than that. So we're expecting to have a pretty decent payback on these initiatives. Some of them are non-employee related, so it's just a matter of scaling back a little bit on discretionary spend, and there's no cost associated with that. So sorry, no more granularity than exactly what the cost is, but we're looking for savings in the range of what I just mentioned.
Understood, and that's additive to the productivity savings that you guys are reporting on a quarterly basis, correct?
Yeah, and a lot of it would affect G&A more than it would gross margin, where we see most of the productivity, but there would be some in there as well. So, yes, it would be additive.
Okay, understood. And then as you look out at, you know, Q2 and Q3, I think, you know, Q2 seasonally is typically a stronger quarter anyway. Should we be thinking about the magnitude of decline from the prior year to be similar to what you experienced in Q1? And then, you know, for Q3, do you guys think you can get back to kind of more of a flat level year over year?
The answer to both of those questions is yes. I think you would be looking at the same magnitude of decline. As I mentioned, the second quarter of last year was our strongest in our history. It was a really good quarter. So I would expect the magnitude of the decline to be similar. That's what we're looking at right now.
Okay. And then I guess flat, you think you can get back to that level in Q3?
Yeah, that's certainly our target as we speak today.
Very good. Thanks a lot.
Sure.
Our next question comes from the line of Carl Blunden with Goldman Sachs. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to get a sense, just as you take a look at the business now, performance has been, I think it surprised many folks to the downside over the last couple of quarters. It seems to be a number of different factors. Has anything changed in terms of how you think about the long-term cash flow ability of the business? I think related to that, it does seem like restructuring charges or add-backs, continue a little bit longer than or much longer than expected initially. Is there a line of sight to reducing those in 2018?
Yeah, we've been talking about the special items add-backs for quite a while now. We made a fair amount of progress, as you probably know, last year. I expect to be at about that level, as I mentioned, this year. The first quarter was particularly high because we have some initiatives that we feel very, very good about that are going to help strengthen our business going forward. So I think what you're seeing is a short-term higher impact as a result of that, but we'll get back in line and then back on the route of declining, I believe, because in terms of our plant structure, it's in pretty good shape. We don't see a need to do as much plant restructuring. We're just working now on some of our processes and our commercial efforts and our procurement efforts, which we know will bear fruit and believe to bear fruit. So, we'll be back on the trajectory of reducing those, I believe, in 2018.
Gotcha. It sounds like you're busy with, a number of different initiatives, some strategic, some blocking and tackling. Obviously, the CEO search is going on. How does refinancing the bonds or extending your maturity wall play into all of that? Is that something that you'd need to have new leadership before you address that? And then, I guess, as a follow-up, as you think about having a short-dated capital structure, at least a prepayable one, that obviously affords you a lot of flexibility, is that something that you are deliberately trying to maintain in the business?
Well, a good question. I mean, we are constantly looking at our capital structure and seeing if we're comfortable with maturities. As you know, we paid off the 10% notes, which were our nearest in maturities about this time last year, later in the summer last year. We're certainly looking at our ABL and possibly extending that. We are considering what we should do with the term loans and the bonds. We haven't made any final decisions on exactly how to move forward with those. I think that we're pretty comfortable that we could do the extension now if we needed to. As far as the performance of the business goes, we would also like to look and see how it performs in the second half of the year to make any real long-term decisions on the capital structure.
Gotcha. That's helpful to hear your thinking. Thanks very much.
Sure.
Our next question comes from the line of Mac Fuller with GSO Capital Partners. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, thank you. On the flexible side, can you just give a little more color on the 6% decline in North America? Are there particular areas that you saw more declines than others?
Yeah, I mean, the areas that we singled out were the ones that we noticed the majority of the decline, which was our protein business and our shrink film business. On the shrink film side, two things occurred. One is we did call out some business that was substandard returns for us. Sometimes that makes sense to do, and in this case it did. So we did reduce our shrink shipments as a result of that. We also saw a little bit of delay in the call-offs of some of the volume we expected in March. As you know, the season is very heavily oriented towards the warmer weather, and we saw a bit of a delay in those costs. We're seeing the volume strengthen here in the second quarter, so we feel like the issue regarding the timing of the shipments is behind us. Protein, I think we've mentioned it before. We've had some customer churn in our protein business. and we're working hard to replace that business, and that was one where we also saw some declines year over year in the first quarter.
Okay. And my second question is regarding productivity savings. I want to make sure I'm thinking apples to apples. Is that the number in the past? Was that number in the past sort of in the $70 million range? And if so, is that sort of still like the annual target that you guys try to get?
That's an annuity we've enjoyed for the last 3 years running. We certainly have action plans in place to ensure that we continue to generate that. Both, as you know, that we call productivity. It's related to our lean manufacturing efforts in the plant, as well as savings from hard savings from capital projects and procurement. And we still are tracking very nicely in procurement. We've got a little more work to do in lean, but it's still a positive for us. No reason to believe that this year won't be similar to prior years in our if not better, in our productivity initiatives.
Great. That's all I have. Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
Our next question comes from the line of Chris Ellis with Barings. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, Mike. Can you repeat the EBITDA bridge you gave in terms of product mix, et cetera? I missed that as you went through it. Second question, just an update on the UK, the issues that we've talked about before. So are the ERP issues now behind the company? It's just a case of trying to get that business back. When will the labels mix shift have annualized? Will it annualize in Q2? And then any update on sterling-based price increases, given we had a euro input costs and having to pass them through would be great. Thank you.
Sure. David, I'll split that. I'll take the bridge first. What I said was in the call, we had a $16 million decline, $4 million in EBITDA. $4 million of that was related to FX. $3 million of that was related to resin. We had volume mix and pricing impact of $12 million. SG&A was worse by $3 million. That's the predominant bridge. There were a few other smaller items, but those are the big items. With respect to the UK mix impact, that was the label mix impact that you're referring to. That really started to change in the second quarter of last year. So we will begin to lap that in the latter half of the second quarter. And regarding the impact of some of the other items that occurred in the UK,
yeah. They
will take
it. I'll address those. The equipment malfunction that we had in the fourth quarter on one of our large machines has been repaired, but we also bought another machine, a brand new version of the same thing, a state-of-the-art printing press, which I inspected last week when I was in the UK, and it's running beautifully. In fact, it runs so well it can handle the volume of the old machine plus the new volume. So we've got effectively increased our capacity for that cardboard business, and we've got a strong pipeline that we're trying to grow into. So we've recovered very nicely from that failure. The ERP implementation, we've just hit the one-year anniversary of that. At that particular location, I also visited it last week. We're seeing nice operational improvements. The factory is running smoothly, lead times are down, and deliveries are back on schedule. We're recovering the customers that we lost as a result of our inability to service them in the fourth quarter. That'll take a little longer, but we're well on the path to recovery there too. Those were self-inflicted wounds, unlike the market shifts the other issues that Brexit that we're talking about. And they shouldn't have happened, but they did, and we've at least recovered from those now.
Did we hit all your questions there, Chris?
Yeah, no, that's great. And just one thing, I know you've been asked in terms of outlook. I think we spoke previously, and you said targeting sort of underlying top-line growth in 17. Is that still applicable given the projects you've got going on? And given what you said in terms of Q2 is a difficult comp, but we should see recovery of EBITDA in H2, Is flat year-on-year likely, or do you think it's going to be down year-on-year?
I think that flat year-on-year is probably reasonable based on what we're looking at now. But again, we've got a lot of work to do here on these initiatives, so I'm loath to get very specific about the second half of the year. We feel good about it. We feel like you're going to see it recover. But what, you know, where it'll end up versus 2016, let's address that a little more in the next call when we've got the second quarter behind us.
Okay.
Thanks, Chris.
Our next question comes from line of Savi Alex with HPS Partners. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, thank you very much. Is it possible if we take each of the issues that the UK labels shift, the equipment malfunction, the ERP, the input, and then the North American protein, is it possible to say the decline in EBITDA was caused, what magnitude of the decline was caused by each of those issues, and then which ones will not recur? Is it possible to give us some sense of where you guys stand with those issues?
Yeah, I mean, again, I'll speak directionally that the biggest issues that we experienced, as you recall, in the fourth quarter and last year were driven by the issues in the UK. As Dave mentioned, we're making good progress on those, but they're still with some carryover impact into the first quarter. And I would say, you know, roughly half of the impact that we felt in the first quarter was related to problems that we saw in the UK. We also had, as I've mentioned, some pricing and volume and mix impacts across the rest of the flexibles business, and realistically, that accounted for the majority of the rest of it. I think we're seeing a slow but steady improvement in the UK impact. It's still early in the second quarter, but as Dave mentioned, he and I spent, you know, quite a bit of time last week really diving into it, and we felt really good about the new leadership and where that's heading. As far as some of the volume and mix issues go, the reason why we'll still be down versus prior year is those continue, albeit we've got great ideas and action plans in place of how we want those to fix themselves. So I think we can get the UK behind us. We still have to deal with some of the other underlying trends of the business, but again, we've got stuff in place to make the trajectory change.
Good, thanks. That was very helpful. And then in the North American, the protein, the customer churns, can you explain a little bit more what happened? Because I know it seems like in the U.S., I'm sorry, if I said UK, I meant North America, protein volumes have been rising or demand has been increasing. So can you explain a little bit more about what happened with your customer churn?
The U.S. has been, and I think, you know, if you look at the other participants in this industry in the marketplace, the U.S. is a very competitive segment. There are segments that are growing, and there are segments where we have a lot of success. But one of the segments that we felt the pain in was in protein, as we've mentioned, and we're just seeing a very competitive environment there on the pricing side, and we're trying to balance the returns that we think are appropriate for that business and the kind of concessions that we want to make. So, you know, I think it's just, you know, hyper-competitive. We have a great product offering. We know that in the long run we're going to be just fine, but that was really what we saw in terms of the churn, is that somebody came in pretty aggressive.
Okay. And then you had also experienced some competitive pressure in the UK. Has that alleviated, or is that still ongoing?
Well, you know, it wasn't, as Dave mentioned, it wasn't as much competition in the UK. I mean, we did have the mix shift in labels, which is really just a change to the competitive set of our customer base, where we're seeing the discounters grow a little bit faster than the mainline customers, the historical customers. So that was mixed. A lot of the issues that we had in the UK, frankly, were self-inflicted. And the ERP issues that we had, the machine breakdown, I'll call it the machine breakdown, of course, was just bad luck. Those are things that we can fix, replace, and go get those customers back. That's what we've been doing. So we're not feeling, I mean, sure, there's competitive pressures globally, but that really wasn't our issue in the UK.
Okay, and then lastly, replacing the customers that you lost due to service issues, how far along are you to replacing those customers? And the same question in North America with replacing the protein and other lost customers.
I would say in the UK, we're about halfway there. We reviewed the list of customers to recapture. We're about halfway there, and we've got a strong pipeline on top of that for new to identify new opportunities. In North America, we've similarly developed a very strong pipeline to address the customer churn issues from last year, and we feel confident that we'll recover that. The issue in a category like protein is that the qualification cycle for new accounts, for new business, is up to 6 months long. So it's not something you can address overnight because you have to test your material with the customer's product for up to 6 months.
Great. Thank you very much for all your answers.
Sure.
Our next question comes from the line of David Henry with KKR. Please proceed with your question.
Thanks. All my questions have been answered.
Okay, David.
Our next question comes from the line of Kevin Beckus with Double Line. Please proceed with your question.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. Just working through the MD&A, and I don't want to get too much in the weeds, but if you just kind of aggregate the different impacts on revenue, COGS, and SG&A, it appears as if FX actually had a positive impact on at least operating income. Do you have any thoughts on that, especially given just where the dollar has gone year over year versus the pound and the euro?
Yeah, I have to check that. But where operating income was relatively low for the quarter, FX obviously has a positive impact on things like SG&A and a negative impact on things like sales and gross margin. And I think if you're seeing that, it's because of that phenomena. I haven't, we'll look at it a little harder and come back if there's a different answer, but I think that's the reason.
Okay. And then one more quick question on FX. I noticed you guys monetized the euro cross-currency swap during the quarter. Just out of curiosity, why did you guys do that, being that it takes off some of the hedges? And then also, do you have any more cross-currency swaps still outstanding?
No, we liquidated the pound last year and the euro this year, as you correctly mentioned, in the first quarter. We have forwards that cover our cash repatriation from foreign currencies into the U.S. in order to make appropriate principal and interest payments. The fact is that we saw an opportunity based on where the euro was trading. We aren't speculators for sure, but we saw that we liquidated that at somewhere around the 105.9 area. I think the euro is trading at 110.5 today, so one could say it was opportunistic, and in many ways it was.
Okay. And then last question here, and once again, I kind of pieced this together through the MD&A, but it appears as if the two acquisitions, Supraplast and Rivendell, did that actually have a negative EBITDA contribution, even on an adjusted basis?
No, it did not. I mean, I would tell you it's immaterial to the size of our business. The reason for that is Supraplast, while it's a neat foray for us into Ecuador and entering into South America, it is about a $13 or $14 or $15 million U.S. business annualized, and EBITDA is in the low single digits. Rivendell was never really an EBITDA play. It was getting us even further into providing services to our customer, which helps support our mainline products in the U.K. So it's not a highly profitable business as much as it's a good business for us in terms of staying close to our customers. But my recollection is that those were both positive EBITDA businesses year over year, but not big enough to make much of a difference at all.
Okay. Perfect. Thanks so much. I'll jump back in the queue.
Sure, Kevin.
Our next question comes from a line of Andrew Dunraj with Morgan Stanley. Please proceed with your question.
Yeah, hi. Apologies if you answered this already. I was disconnected from the call. But just looking at your special items, I know this is business improvement consulting cost of $8.2 million. Can you provide more color on what that is?
Yeah, it's the two initiatives, or the initiatives that Dave and I both referenced. One is some what I'll call commercial improvement consulting, as well as understanding our profitability at a very detailed SKU level at our major plants and how we could, you know, work and improve our overall profitability. And then we are embarking on some indirect procurement cost studies. One of the categories we haven't really attacked in the 4 years that we've been a combined business is indirect. And there's a lot of opportunity in both MRO, in MRO, freight, energy, et cetera. But to go get that opportunity, we needed some help. So really, it's composed of commercialization, SKU analysis, and strategization, and procurement.
Yeah, I guess what I'm trying to figure out is in the first 3 months of last year, it was, you know, approximately $2 million, and I basically jumped $6 million. I'm trying to figure out, you know, are you just really focusing more on that the last 3 months of this year? And I guess, like, what has changed year over year in terms of kind of the strategy or, you know, initiatives that you're doing this quarter?
No, these were some major studies with major consulting firms that are very far-reaching in really digging in to help make sure that we can execute against these projects, whereas in the past, some of our business consulting has been in developing tools that help us go forward. This has been much more detailed than that. So it's a much higher level in the first quarter. It will be at a higher level in the second quarter. We'll have to see where it goes, but it likely will tail off in Q3 and 4 as we complete those studies.
Gotcha. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we have reached the end of the question and answer session. Mr. Olgar, I would like to turn the floor back over to you for closing comments.
Sure. I want to thank everybody for joining our call again today, and I look forward to speaking to you and showing you what some of the improvements that we're undertaking will have on our financials. And again, thanks for your interest in the company.